From GPB News, this is On Second Thought. I'm Adam Ragusea. It's April, National Autism Awareness Month. This hour, we will hear from the co-founder of a Georgia bakery that hires adults on the autism spectrum. Just ahead, DeKalb County bus drivers are making their voices heard by not showing up to work. They are demanding better pay and benefits. Also going to talk about the heroic efforts of one man during the shooting at a Tennessee Waffle House. The Break Room Gang talks about all of those stories and more. That's all ahead this hour, and we'd like to hear from you. Do you have a child on the autism spectrum? What's been your experience like as a parent? What's been your experience with employment opportunities? Give us a call at 404-500-9457. We're on Twitter at OST Talk, or you can post to Facebook, and we might feature your comments on the show. It's been 7 months now since Hurricane Maria devastated Puerto Rico. Blackouts there continue. Utility crews on the island are still in emergency restoration mode. To help out in their own way, Georgia Tech's Economic Development Lab has opened up free office space in Atlanta's Tech Square to entrepreneurs and researchers from Puerto Rico. It's an expansion of a program that began all the way back in 2012. Jamili Ali Pons is making use of that space. She's a biomedical student from Puerto Rico's Inter-American University. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Also with us is Monica Novoa. She's a program manager for the Economic Development Lab at Georgia Tech. Good morning to you.
Hi. Good morning.
Jamili, just start off, explain how the hurricane has affected your life and your work.
Well, after Hurricane Maria, a lot of experiment laboratories in my university were damaged after the a lot quantity of water there. So the chemicals and the other, you know, materials were damaged. So that in that case, were research and investigations get in pause stage, and you know, we don't continue to the next level in the research.
Sure, sure. So now you've been able to continue your research in this lab in Atlanta thanks to Georgia Tech?
Yeah, it's a great opportunity to meet some people that can help me to get my research to the next level, to get some new methods and, you know, a space for me.
Without getting too esoteric, what are you researching?
It's a microbiologist research. I search a parasite that affects the life cycle of the monarch butterflies. And, you know, it's a problem that affects all the pollinators in the world.
Great. Monica at Georgia Tech, we mentioned that this program from Tech's Economic Development Lab is not new. It was not formed in response to Hurricane Maria. It started all the way back in 2012. You've just been able to ramp it up in part in response to Maria to help out scholars like Jamili, who have been displaced, who can't continue to do their research in Puerto Rico because of the continuing awful situation there. What was the intent behind the formation of the program in the first place back in 2012 when there was no such emergency to prompt it?
Yes. So back in 2012, the Puerto Rico Science and Research and Technology Trust, El Fideicomiso in Puerto Rico, asked Georgia Tech to perform an assessment of the current innovation, research and development ecosystem in the island, especially centered around the role of the universities. At that time, we started collaborating with several universities, nonprofit organizations, private corporations to develop entrepreneurial programs and to teach the entrepreneurial ecosystem organizations how to be more innovative and creative. So we have been working in Puerto Rico since then, and significant momentum has been built before the hurricanes. After the hurricanes, as Jamili mentioned, several universities had to stop their research, their investigations. Several entrepreneurial support organizations had to stop programs like, for example, Parallel 18 had to stop one of their calls for applications. And one of our partners, Grupo Guayacan, had to stop two programs, two competitions that they were running until this year. Yeah. So we thought, okay, what can we do? We have so many relationships and we felt that we need to do something. So we put together this program to give an opportunity to innovators and researchers like Yamily to come here to Atlanta to get inspiration to leave the innovation ecosystem that we had built here to meet faculty, students, entrepreneurs, and to learn from them so that she can go back now to Puerto Rico and serve as an inspiration to other students that may have an inclination to pursue entrepreneurial activities or to take the research to the next level. So now she can go back and inspire and motivate them.
Jamily, are you sure that you are going to go back after you're done doing your research at Georgia Tech? I mean, this is a thing that happens with disasters from a lot of countries. A lot of people never go back.
Well, in my case, I want to go back to, you know, be an opportunity to other students that may don't have these opportunities to came here to see, to expand his visions to the research area, to the entrepreneurs programs, and, you know, to expand their life, students' life, because it's not just to go to class and take a few classes for your program. It's just to go out the bridge and, you know, expand.
Sure.
Try to new fields to expand and, you know the world and the
Absolutely.
Older people. Yeah.
Sure. That's Jamily Ali-Pons, a research student from Puerto Rico visiting in Atlanta. Also with us was Monica Novoa, a program manager for Georgia Tech's Economic Development Lab, which is hosting researchers like Jamily who have been displaced from Puerto Rico due to the ongoing effects of Hurricane Maria. Thanks to you both and good luck.
Thank you.
It's On Second Thought. I'm Adam Ragusea. It's National Autism Awareness Month. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimates 1 in 68 U.S. children is on the autism spectrum. A decade ago, Tempa Kohler and her husband Michael opened up a bakery called Special Needs and Treats. It's in Lawrenceville, and it employs special needs adults, including people on the autism spectrum. She joins us now in our studio. And Tempa, this is an issue that has a personal relevance to you and your family, right?
Yes, it does.
Tell us about your son.
We have a son. His name is Bradley. He's 28 years old, and he has Fragile X syndrome. And it is a genetic disorder that causes anywhere from mild to severe mental impairment. And there are some who have Fragile X who are also on the autism spectrum.
Fragile X syndrome. I've never heard about that. What's it like?
You're not alone in that. We say that to a lot of people, and still people don't know what that is. It is the second largest known cause of mental impairment next to Down syndrome. And like I said, it is a genetic disorder. I am a carrier. I got it from my father, and he got it from his mother. And so it is all through our family.
Wow. So what led to you starting this bakery in Lawrenceville that employs special needs adults? Was it in part to give your own son a job?
Yes, it was. We moved to Georgia about 20 years ago, and my husband used to be a baseball commissioner out in Grayson, and we had about 280 special needs young adults and children that played baseball, and all of us parents used to sit around and just talk and be like, what are we going to do with our children once they age out of the systems in the different counties? And at 22, there's just not a lot out there. So we knew that we were going to have to create something for him. I've been a baker since I was 13, and we thought, well, why don't we open a bakery and we'll just let him work there.
Has that been able to afford Bradley some measure of independence?
Yes, some. He works Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. The other days of the week, he usually still stays home. But, you know, on Sundays, we go to church, and he has gained friends there. But I think it's helped him to be more outgoing and to talk to more people as they come in. And he has, gotten friends from work, you know, people that we didn't know before, and just customers that come in, and they see him on a regular basis. And so it has created some friendships.
So if I were to walk into Special Needs and Treats, your bakery in Lawrenceville, would I, as a customer just showing up to buy a cake, would I notice that there was anything different about this place?
I think you would notice something completely different about us. We have Bible verses all over the wall. We let people know that God is the center of our business. But also when you walk in, we offer 26 different kinds of cupcakes. We have cheesecakes. We have cakes that are decorated by our special needs adults. Each one of them get to do a cake every week, and those are for sale. We have cookies and brownies and blondies. You can come in and order specialty cakes. We do have to have a more of a notice than just a couple of days on those type of cakes. But it is a unique setting. We do have, you know, some seating to come in and have a cupcake if you would like, but you can place orders to go. But there is... you know, you're going to see people in wheelchairs, some that use walkers, some that may not look you right in the eye when you first start talking to them because they just don't have that ability because it's part of their disability. But they all have their own unique way of greeting you. And so you're going to notice that when you walk in.
Having a workforce comprised of special needs adults would present a number of challenges. Is your business profitable, or is that even the point?
No, that's not the point. It's not about the income. It's about the impact. And, of course, we do run on donations because we are a nonprofit. The main part of the nonprofit is we try to ensure that any child in our county that cannot afford a birthday cake gets one through us. So that's the nonprofit side of it. But we employ special needs adults to help us achieve that goal, and they help us do the mixing of the cupcakes and the cakes, and they help make the icings, and they help decorate the cupcakes. They do so many jobs that, you know, allow us to do our nonprofit business.
What's it like back behind the counter, back in the bakery? Do things run reasonably orderly? Are there some surprises sometimes?
There's surprises minute by minute, it seems like. but we try to be as orderly as we can because you really have to be. You have to have a plan for the day and you try to stick to it. It doesn't always go that way. But, you know, we have certain people that have certain jobs. And when we bring someone new, and sometimes it takes a couple of weeks to learn that person very well because you might try them on a job and they can't do it. So you got to try something different. But once they find that niche and that thing that they really love to do, I mean, it works like clockwork. And, you know, I don't ever have to worry about them not coming to work because they are there all the time.
You ever had somebody come work with you and you just couldn't find a place for them?
We've only had a couple, and they actually worked, you know, maybe a month or two. And honestly, it was them who came to us and said, this is just not what I thought it was going to be. And they have gone on to find other things to do.
So how has this impacted your own family's life, your life with Bradley, who, as we mentioned before, your son suffers from a genetic disease that is new to me, Fragile X?
Yes. I think it has brought us closer together. We work a lot of hours together at the bakery, so that has put a little bit of a strain, but it's getting better now. We are, you know, about 4.5 years in. We just moved last August to a new facility. But we've, I think we have a better understanding of each other. And we, like I said, we spend a lot of time together. So actually the time apart we have is pretty nice too. But, you know, we get along. It's helped Bradley grow more. He can do more jobs. It's actually shown us and opened our eyes that he really can do things if we just allow him to try to do them.
So if people listening want to support or get involved with special needs and treats in Lawrenceville, what can they do?
Well, we do have just a physical address. We have a lot of people that like to still mail in checks, and we think that's awesome. We are at 156 Scenic Highway in Lawrenceville. We also have a Facebook page, and we have a website, and both of those, you know, will tell a lot about what our mission is and about employing the special needs adults.
And, of course, people can just swing by and buy a cupcake, too.
Oh, yes, they can. They can come by and get as many cupcakes as they want.
Right. That's Tepa Kohler. She's co-founder of the Lawrenceville Bakery Special Needs and Treats, which employs special needs adults, including her adult son, Bradley. Thank you, Tepa.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate you having us on.
It's On Second Thought. I'm Adam Ragusea. It's been another long week. We talked about, gosh, the Peabody Awards from UGA getting announced, racist robots, and Georgia peaches. They're doing better this year than last. So as we do every Friday, we've gathered a group of smart people to talk about this week's news. It's time for the break room.
And today marks day three of the school bus driver sick out in DeKalb County. Drivers protesting over pay and benefit.
This is not okay. This is hate speech. Because that should not be expressed in school. We already have enough dealing with people bringing guns in school. Now you want to bring racism into it?
Screams from the haters, got a nice ring to it. I guess every superhero need his theme music. No one man should have all that power. The clock's ticking, I just count the hours.
All joining us now to talk about those stories and more is Sumaya Khalifa of the Islamic Speakers Bureau of Atlanta, Korean Daily reporter H.B. Cho, Georgia State University professor Hector Fernandez, and Fayette County Commissioner Steve Brown. Good morning to you all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, that was big. I like it. So the DeKalb sick out continues. Parents and administrators have had to deal with a school bus driver shortage this week as they've been calling in sick. Hundreds of drivers staying at home asking for more pay and better retirement benefits. On average, DeKalb school bus drivers make about $19 an hour. Be tough to live on $19 an hour in a place like Decatur, but it ain't minimum wage, Steve Brown. Do they have a legit complaint here, these school bus drivers?
Well, I will tell you, DeKalb, their school system probably has some of the best paid school drivers in the state, if you can imagine that. School bus drivers are notoriously the lowest paid people in the school system. And, you know, my point is, if they're going to guard your children, and they are, they're guarding the safety of your children, getting them to and from school, what is that worth to you? And I understand you're only working a couple of hours a day, but we need to figure something out that so that you get quality people who are taking care of our children.
Yeah, and I suppose it comes to benefits too, right, HB?
Definitely. I think they have a legit claim, but then I just wish they did a better job letting the parents know. I talked to several parents. Actually, all of the parents that I talked to, it wasn't that many, but they just only found out once their kids were not picked up.
Huh. Wow. I suppose there's a lot of questions about how you could raise the revenue to pay people what they're worth if they're going to guard your children. Guard the lives of your children. One idea that's been floated is that people who blow by that stop sign that extends out from the side of the school bus get fined up to $1,000. Could right. conceivably some of that money go towards the drivers? Is that your fix there, Samaya?
Well, that's a great idea. Well, let's go for that. But they need to get paid more. And, you know, there's a domino effect. When they did not take the children to school, the parents were late to work. It's got an impact on our economy. So we need to step back and look at the bigger picture versus the $19 an hour that they're getting paid. Right. It's got a major economic impact on the community.
Sure thing. Moving on to next topic. A Florida teen is apologizing for the racist promposal sign that he posted. That's a sign to ask someone to go to the prom with you. The sign in question read, "If I was black, I'd be picking cotton, but I'm white, so I'm picking you for prom?" Question mark. Hector, what?
I just think the logic is not there. I don't think it's a very good analogy. I mean, if you're thinking, you know, African Americans were picking cotton because they were slaves, so does that mean he is asking her out to the prom because he's being forced to? There's nothing else, or, you know, his last option or something of the sort? It's not a very good, I mean, analogy. I mean, aside from being racially insensitive, right? If I were the kid's parents, I would be concerned about the quality of the logic he's being taught at school.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Well, I'm concerned about the parents themselves because the racism comes from the home. So the parents are doing something that gives signals to the children that it's okay to say stuff like that. Plus, our schools are not teaching us about our total history, about African-American history. We are so European-centric that the kids are not exposed to that. So there's so many different levels to this that really makes me upset.
Yeah, but ultimately, we're talking about a sign that was posted by a child himself. Is he getting a little bit more backlash than he deserves, HB?
Well, I think he's getting more backlash than, I mean, if it was actually funny, then I think he would be getting more. So he just do better at being funny, a funny kid.
Okay. Interesting take. All right. Let's see if we can blast through one more topic before the break. Yesterday, a jury found comedian Bill Cosby guilty of 3 counts of aggravated indecent assault for drugging and sexually abusing a woman at his home in Philadelphia all the way back in 2004. Here's a clip from ABC News of one of the victims speaking out. This is Victoria Valentino. She says that Cosby drugged and raped her in 1969 in his Hollywood Hills home then.
We are vindicated, we are validated, and we are now part of the tsunami of women's power and justice.
So, Steve Brown, do you think that this finally puts the nail in the coffin of Cosby's legacy?
Oh, I think he's pretty much killed it. And if he hasn't done it himself through the verdict, his associates who appeared on Good Morning America, who are now comparing his conviction to Emmett Till, they will thoroughly trash whatever legacy he had left.
Samaya, what do you think?
Well, I'm absolutely crushed in the image of Dr. Huxtable that I grew up with. I'm very disappointed. Yeah. I'm glad he got the verdicts that he did, and he deserves them, but it just, like, you know, very disappointing in him.
Absolutely. Is there ever going to be a time when the culture can reclaim the Cosby Show for all of the good things that it represented once it can be? Is it ever severable from Cosby and his crimes? Anybody?
I think it's too public. I you know, it maybe in future generations when everyone knows, you know, they don't know who Bill Cosby is. OK, maybe it comes back and the value of the show comes shining through. But I would say not in the next couple of generations.
All right. It's on Second Thought. I'm Adam Ragusea. We're talking about the week's news here with the Break Room Gang. The guests this morning are Sumaya Khalifa of the Islamic Speakers Bureau of Atlanta, Korean Daily reporter H.B. Cho, Georgia State University Professor Hector Fernandez, and Fayette County Commissioner Steve Brown. Let's go on to our next story here, y'all. And I should warn parents, if you're listening with kids, this might get a little bit sensitive for y'all. You might want to check back with us in a couple of minutes here. But Atlanta's own R&B star Usher facing another lawsuit.
I ain't happy, baby, but there's so many other things I gotta deal with. I think that you should let it burn. Feeling the same in your body, don't want you to know.
Oh, a clip from Usher's song Burn from his Confessions album. Speaking of burning, a Fulton County woman is accusing Usher of giving her herpes, and that normally wouldn't be actionable as in a lawsuit, but a lot of women have accused Usher of having herpes, of spreading it recklessly without warning women before engaging in unprotected sex with them. Sumaya, from what you've read about these cases, do you think that this particular woman in Fulton County has a case?
Well, it seems like he knew about it. The world knows about it, and I'm wondering why she did not know about it before she engaged in anything like that.
Hector, what do you make of it?
Well, personally, I think she's seeking financial gain because there's a precedent, right? But, you know, now that it's happened...
Usher settled a similar case,
yeah, exactly,
is what you mean.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. But, you know, now that it's happened, I think it's a good opportunity to actually educate people about the fact that many people around the world are infected with this type of herpes, and they don't know it, you know? So it's an issue that needs to be out there.
All right. Earlier this week, four people killed in a Nashville, Tennessee Waffle House. A Waffle House. The shooter entered the restaurant with an AR-15. James Shaw Jr. rushed the shooter, grabbed the rifle, burning his hand by holding the end of the gun in the process, ripping away the gun from the shooter. Shaw then threw the gun over the counter to get it away from the shooter, wrestled the shooter out the door. He was grazed by a bullet during the incident. Wow, here's a clip from Time Magazine.
I didn't really fight that man to save everybody else. I know that might not be a popular thing, but I'm really honest. I'm going to be honest to the core. I took the gun so I could get myself out.
Is he being overly modest, Steve?
Well, I mean, we would always hope, you know, in our best dreams of ourselves that we would act the same way. But my gosh, what a heroic act by that man. And you know, I think it's important to note, too, the fact that you don't rush an armed assailant doesn't mean, you know, you're not an honorable person. You know, the normal person would duck for cover. He just rose to a higher level. And hopefully we can all aspire to do the same thing if given the situation.
Anytime an incident like this, it becomes a Venn diagram for how people view the debate on gun control. A lot of people who are on the pro-gun control side, HB, have been saying that this is evidence that a solution to these problems of mass shootings is not necessarily having, quote unquote, another good guy with a gun there. Mm-hmm. An unarmed person can address the situation and in the process not endanger other people in a hail of crossfire. Do you think that's the right way of looking at it?
I guess my first reaction when I heard that story was that Waffle House is known for attracting customers who tend to carry guns. And a lot of very, not as tragic, but you know, the instance that could have gone really bad have taken place in Waffle Houses around this state as well. And I was just wondering why there wasn't, and there was an incident where an employee got involved in shooting with a customer, mm-hmm. because the employee was also carrying an arm. So unless we know that every Waffle House has somebody that has a gun on him, I don't think there is that can be a solution.
So with that phenomenon in mind, Sumaya, where do you weigh in on selling beer at Waffle House? An Atlanta Waffle House has become the first to sell beer. It opened at SunTrust Park last week.
Well, you know what? I think I'm the wrong person because I don't do beer for religious reasons. So you won't find me at a Waffle House that sells beer. But, you know, from a business standpoint, I think they picked the right place by the stadium because everybody goes to the stadium to drink beer and have a good time.
But from a public safety perspective, Steve, I mean, you know, I love the Waffle House. The Waffle House is a temple to anyone who lives in this part of the country. But like, it is a place where people show up in late at night with not the best of judgment.
Well, Adam,
with their guns.
The problem is, you know, don't raise the standard at Waffle House. And we should always have a place where we can wear pajamas, sunglasses, and flip-flops at 2 in the morning and have a place. I think if you start selling beer at Waffle House, now all of a sudden we're going to have to dress appropriately and, you know, who knows?
Okay. Just think if they serve champagne.
Let's try to sneak in the big topic that everyone is talking about, keeping up with Kanye, who's been tweeting a lot lately, including a possible hint at running for president in 2024. Kanye has been tweeting lots of things in support of Donald Trump, saying that he likes him. Should we be as like surprised and freaked out by that as a lot of people are, Hector?
Not at all. I mean, I think there are many commonalities between Kanye and Mr. Trump. You know, they're all about brand management, and their brand is their name.
And bragging, braggadocio.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the shoes can be called something different, but Kanye's brand is Kanye. So I could see how he could admire Mr. Trump. Very questionable to me, but I mean, I can understand it from his perspective. That said, what he tweets, you know, it could be interpreted in a gazillion ways. So
they're all like little Zen cones.
Exactly.
Yeah. Very open to interpretation. All right. We'll have to leave it there. Thanks to our break room gang for helping us review the week's news. Sumaya Khalifa, HB Cho, Hector Fernandez, and Steve Brown. Have yourselves a great weekend, gang.
You too, Adam.
Same thing.
Thanks, Adam.